We're going to switch gears slightly. We were having a lot of good discussion about general as well as some specific provisions that we wanted to be sure and address, but we're going to move forward and then come back to the discussion on provisions to include, because it occurred to us based on a wonderful suggestion that we received that maybe we should spend a little more time thinking about the types of transactions that we might want to cover in the first set of model agreements or model educational tools or what have you. And then once we think more about that, that might better inform the discussion on provisions to include. So Congress directed us to develop these model contracts based on the most popular types of public-private partnerships. So what does that mean? What types of deals do we want to reflect? Do we want to reflect a design, build, finance, operate, maintain transaction with maybe instructions for stop here if your deal only envisions design, build, finance? We've had a lot of discussion about the need to address availability payments. Should we be sure to address availability payments as well as toll-based concessions? What about facility types? We've heard a couple of comments related to types of facilities. Non-tolled highway extensions, for example, managed lane facilities, intermodal facilities, you know, all types of things that enter into kind of the different menus of options that are comprised and make up these deals. So what types of transactions, in your view, should we be looking to model in these agreements? I'm ready to listen.
Everyone's thinking. Everyone's quiet. So I guess the question on the table is...
My friend from Georgia.
Okay. This is Daryl from Georgia DOT.
Thanks, Daryl.
Yes, definitely to the design, build, finance option. Mm-hmm. I'd like
Can
to...
Can anyone hear Daryl?
Let me get away from the speaker.
Okay.
One thing that I was going to mention earlier was the fact that a lot of these types of contracts, I think that we're in not in a plateau, but we're in still in the learning curve in the P3 market. And I think even design build finance represents one of the changing kind of, rather than it being, you know, like bringing a project that is zero funded in through an availability versus just a portion of it is financed. I think that we're in a learning curve on that. So I definitely think that design build finance is something that we ought to include in addition to the traditional toll concession type and availabilities.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Hank had a comment. Regina.
Going back to thinking sort of about the either the cafeteria model or just having ideas and recommendations, things like that, it might be helpful to look at each different component of that, at least for the which deal types question, and sort of having them segmented out, because, you know, across the country, I don't know if there's going to be all one kind or the other. I think there's going to be some that have the, you know, the F in it, some don't have the F in it, the O&M, some don't have the O&M. So I don't know if there's going to be a predominant type that you guys should focus on, but maybe just look at the different components of it, and so that if people are going along and have a certain type of model that they're going to be doing, they can look under sort of each category and say, okay, here's the different, you know, things that we have to think about, here's how people have looked at it in the past, perhaps pros and cons of different examples. So that's at least initial thoughts on that particular question.
Hypothetically, we couldn't do everything all at once. I mean, Deborah can work miracles, but I'm not so sure on this one. Where would you say we should start? In if we can't do everything, how do we slice and dice? Do we do it by, you know, what kind of concession are we looking at? What kind of facility are we looking at? What would make sense to the community? Are you all thinking about the answer, or are you all wondering why are we even being asked?
I think DJ is formulating a response.
Alternatively, maybe another option would be to think about focusing on the prioritized provisions in the context of different types of transactions or different types of projects. So if, as we spoke about in the earlier session, there's the certain provisions that are important to address, you could address those in the context of different types of transactions through the commentary and education that you provide.
But how would you slice and dice, how would you express the different kinds of transactions? I guess that's the question that's kind of on the table. How, what's the best, what's the most useful way to define the transaction?
I mean, so to the extent that the value of this exercise is to shorten the learning curve for those entering into P3s.
Can everyone hear DJ over there?
Okay. And kind of going back to Andy's limiting, saving thousands of hours of conversations, I mean, maybe starting with availability payments would be good, since there have been a couple of those transactions, but more are coming.
So you would start with the kind of concession?
Yeah, I would start with the concession model availability payment. Since the user fee, we have some precedents that people could look at, and there are still quite a few questions about the best way to structure availability payment deals.
I'm not convinced that the content of your document would look that different for, if it's an educational tool, would look that different for a tolled concession or availability payment. I think a lot of the issues that you'd be dealing with are common to both, and I think to deal with both is, and to attempt to deal with both in the timescale that you have, is not unachievable. I mean, I think with respect to the gentleman to my left, I'm not sure personally if there was one of design, build, finance, toll concession, and availability payments that you didn't have time to do. I'm not sure personally that maybe the design, build, finance section could wait and come later outside of your timescales. I mean, I think the clarification for me is that you're not attempting to do anything on brownfield monetizations, which is good, because I think that's another beast in and of itself. But I think, you know, within those two models, there's basically kind of five or six buckets of issues that you know, generic buckets of issues that you should be dealing with, a lot of which are common to both. And it's not a big, you know, it's not a big heavy lift to explain how and the ways in which those issues would be addressed would be different in a toll concession model versus availability payment model.
Maybe even going back to where Jake was just a few moments ago, would it make sense to create something that just dealt with common provisions and then kind of made a commitment to, over time, dealing with variations on those depending on, say, the concession model used? Would that be useful? Because I doubt that we could kind of cover the waterfront between now and December. And we haven't got much guidance as to what we're supposed to do, but one of the things that we were told is that we're supposed to start with the most popular kind of concession. I don't even know how to define most popular kind of concession when you're talking about such a small sample, and there's so many variations based on each project as we've been talking about. Jake, did you want to add anything?
Mark had something.
You know, and we talked about definitions in a different context. We talked about availability payments. Not everyone might have the same definition. Do we even have the same definition of public-private partnership? The DOT over the years has produced I'm kind of pointing at Jake here, because Jake, I think, was the author of several of these. But we've produced a number of documents over the years describing the phenomenon of public-private partnerships. In those, we've talked about a P3 as being anything other than a traditional design bid build. Where I'm leading to was a question that Bill Reinhart was asking me before. He's not here now. But design build, is that for purposes of this definition, a public-private partnership? There's certainly a massive number of design-build contracts. You know, are we going there, or is that
That's a great thing to bring up, Mark. Let me just add that, for better or for worse, the Office of Innovative Program Delivery has basically said that public-private partnership is something that involves transferring the financing risk. And we've left it at that. So, you know, a regular old design build wouldn't be in our wheelhouse. And I wouldn't mind spending a little bit of time on that if there's some differing opinions. Yes.
I don't disagree. I don't think design build is P3. But I would point out that as you're having more of these very large transportation design build projects where the scope of the responsibility shifting to the design builder is increasing, there's a tremendous amount of overlap. A lot of the things that I think need to be addressed in standard P3 contracts, like right of way, like utilities, like design review and things like that, they overlap, but I still think, I personally consider design build to be something separate and distinct from P3 because of the finance component.
Thank you. Steve?
Yeah, I agree with that line. Where you get blurred, though, is design build finance, where the design build contractor is asked to finance what we call gap payments, which would in effect be delayed construction progress payments beyond the term of the construction period.
And we wouldn't count that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think that's a true partnership, but it's getting closer to the line.
Yeah. We spent so much time as an office when we first started up figuring out exactly what it was that we were going to deal with, and we early on said we couldn't do everything, so we kind of had to narrow it down, and that's where we got to.
We have a comment back here.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think we could spend 4 hours, 8 hours, whatever, trying to decide whether we should do, you know, availability payment or tolled first or whatever. I think if you want to get the most bang for your buck, what you need to do is look at what are the most common kind of terms across all these agreements and put something together for those. Because if you do that, you're going to hit the widest swath and you're going to pick the issues that come up the most. So you get that set done, and then you can think about, okay, what do we add on specifically? But I think if you're limited on time and you want to get the first thing out, that's where you prioritize your effort.
Does anyone else have anything to say about that? That's a really interesting thought. And it goes back a little bit to, you know, what I was talking about before, and I think what Jake kind of put out on the table.
I hate to rain a bit on that parade. This is John Smolin from Nossman again, but there will be a lot that generally overlaps between the two of them, but then there's going to be a lot that could be a bit of misdirection that is particular to a particular AP that you would look at or a particular concession that you looked at. And there may be things that appear in both in one context and don't appear in either in a different context. So I would only ask that, to the extent that we continue to beat the drum of educational, we would say, if this was the very pragmatic strategy of putting out something, that there would be a very prominent introduction that says things that we've all been saying. P3s are unique. There's a lot of state input or public owner input that is a tail that wags several of the dogs. What you see is an overlap between, just to continue on Brad's point, APs and toll concessions. These are generally things that that have, you know, as a sampling have been encountered. All of those things that just continues to communicate in the educational context to the person who's coming to this fresh, this is not a plug-and-play exercise. I'm self-conscious that that may be more derisive of the effort than productive, but I continue to have these impulses that we don't want to lose sight of the fact that homogenous is a non-starter.
Yeah, I think that you may have just, you know, said a really good quote, that this is not a plug-and-play exercise. I don't know exactly what Congress had in mind, but something tells me that they'd like to see a little bit of a plug-and-play, and this would be very difficult. Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Tamar? Can you give? Oh, okay.
When you all were doing your sifting, where does operate and maintain without finance come in? I mean, it sounded like you were using finance as a screen, that's a P3. But what about where a state maintains the finance piece but does a operate and maintain piece? Would that be in or out?
Well, as far as our program of practice, I mean, since we're a finance office, focus on transactions that contain the finance aspect. However, I mean, we're interested in hearing your thoughts on whether or not we need to spend time for this particular effort focusing on the operate and maintain aspects of a transaction.
Yeah, I think sort of echoing comments from earlier, as long as you're, I think it was over here somewhere, as long as you're saying what's not in and why it's not in, then I think you have cover, so you can decide to, you know, focus on AP or focus on told, but say explicitly that one or the other isn't there for whatever reason, so that it doesn't appear to be that you're defining the universe of options for people.
Yeah. And one way that I'd say kind of how we drew our box was that if you're looking at a transaction that's a P3, if you're looking at a transaction that involves a private entity along with the public entity to deliver the project, and that transaction by its nature brought in kind of non-traditional sources of money, that's the transaction that we're interested in. So it's those transactions that by their nature provide kind of a conduit for funding that a state couldn't access through the traditional way, if that makes sense. But that's a good point, Tamar, that we need to be clear on what we're talking about and what's included in our scheme. Pardon me?
It'll get messy when you wander down to the question about multimodal or intermodal facilities in terms of what, you know, when you expand beyond toll-based projects to other mixes of funding and finance and what's in there, and that it's trying to be highway-specific requirements. So,
yeah, I think you're right.
I think this echoes something that you said. Sorry, it's Mike Mathieu from Hogan Lovells here again. I think this echoes something that you were saying earlier, that there's only so much you can do. And to have utility, I think focusing on one plain vanilla option before going for the cookies and cream or the rocky road, you know, is really the way to go. And to me, the thing that needs the most education, coming back to that theme, is the full design, build, finance, operate, maintain piece. Whether that's got availability payments or it's a toll concession, I think, as Andy said, I think you can manage that degree of variability. But getting people to understand the impact of how you specify the design in the outset, the level of freedom that you give people to optimize the design so that you get efficient lifecycle maintenance, and the impact of setting your handback requirements at the end of the concession and seeing that whole symmetry and how that all ties in with the finance piece. I mean, that's pretty fundamental stuff, but it's key learning materials that you need to get across to people. And I think if you focus on that model and focus on it for, you know, a relatively plain vanilla road, so not a tunnel, not a bridge where other issues come into play, and get your base case sorted out, and you can look at adding the cookies and cream or the rocky road after that.
That's a really good thought. Any comments on what you just heard?
I would agree that in the short term, that would be a good idea.
Speak up, Daryl.
I can't. Not there. Having just converted a DBFOM to a design build finance, he's exactly right. I mean, there's elements in there that can be pulled away and extracted to meet your individual needs. And so that's a quick way for you to cover all the bases without overprescribing.
Thank you.
So this is really intriguing to me, I have to say. Any other comments on this? DJ, you're not allowed to use your BlackBerry. What do you think? It is. When it comes to you, anyway. Yeah. Any comments? No. Hank.
Hank, I didn't recognize you.
I have the beard now. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Trying to blend in. I think that's a very pragmatic approach of doing sort of the biggest picture possible on, and especially on sort of a simple, you know, road without the tunnels and bridges or anything else, because then it does give people that opportunity to sort of digest it as much as possible, pull pieces out when they need to, and you know, if you want to use the most popular term from the statute, you know, roads are the most populous part of the infrastructure. So it's also going to sort of have a pragmatic effect on addressing what is, you know, most common. So I would support that kind of approach.
And Mark has somebody.
I'm just going to quickly say I completely agree that that's the easiest way to implement this, partially because if you think about, can people hear me? Okay.
State your name.
Jennifer Mayer, Federal Highway Administration. Innovative program delivery. Briefly, we think about the difference between the availability payment and the real toll concession. If we go into the AP, we have to talk about managing performance and the provisions that you put in the absence of the toll motivation. With the real toll concession, you can you just have to talk about the revenue, which is a one can of worms, which I'm more prepared to open up. Then I'm prepared to open up the can of worms about performance standards in an availability payment. I think we want to take on both eventually, but if I had to choose, and being someone that may be called on to help with this, my bias would be towards attacking the toll concession first.
Any other comments? Mark, Jake, Deborah, did you want to comment on this? It's an intriguing approach.
Was your hand on its way up?
Pardon me?
No, DJ looked like his hand was on its way up. Oh, okay. Morteza had a comment on that.
Maybe another thing to consider is that some states might not have the appropriate legislation for availability payment, so that might not be applicable for some states. So that's something that you may want to do some research and see which states can use availability payment model more, or which states can use the toll concession model more. We have also received a lot of projects, a lot of applications for TIFIA for the next 1 or 2 years, so that might be a good indication of where the states are going. So that can pretty much provide some insight that in the next 2 or 3 years, how the projects are going to be procured. So that can be a good indication for you. And I also wanted to mention another side that maybe we are not discussing right now, and that's the you know, after you sign a contract, there is a there's a lot of things that's going to happen after that. People are going to implement it. And we talked about definitions and how we want to have similar definitions among different contracts so we understand each other when we're talking about different terms. Another piece of it is that after we sign a contract, there's a lot of interaction between the private partner, between the states and FHWA, and there are a lot of provisions actually about those interactions in contracts. So that might be actually another low-hanging fruit that we develop provisions to make sure that there is a process in place that all projects are following the same system, the same process in terms of, for example, one of the things that comes to my mind is the necessary approvals for construction. It could be interactions with Army Corps of Engineers for construction permits. It could be approvals from FHWA. It could be the release of federal funds and payments or project development plans. It could be in terms of the finance plan, major projects finance plan, and how it should be updated on an annual basis, whose responsibility it is. It could be in terms of communication between between the concessioner, states, and FHWA in terms of certain risks or certain activities, for example, NEPA documents, and who's responsible for who and when should it be done and whose risk it is. So there are a lot of provisions in contract that is related to all this process that maybe if you can also tackle that, I would say it's low-hanging fruit because all projects have to go through this process. And if there is a certain process that is applied to all different projects at different states, it makes it easier for the concessioner, it makes it easier for the state, and also makes it easier for FHWA.
Great, thank you.
Thank you very much. Lots of stuff to think about there. Any other comments?
All right. I don't feel limited to the contract type. Remember, we still have provisions on the table. I sort of skipped over the section on specific provisions, but if you have any thoughts that you were holding on to on that topic, please feel free to continue that discussion as well. John?
Again, my brain's working in the background with some of the things that all these wonderful things that folks have been saying. And I'm thinking maybe, again, to abstract out that a glossary would be a really good beginning place for these sorts of things. Again, not getting in the definition morass that we discussed before, but general terminology, and then that can also communicate just by the presentation of a glossary as sort of first out of the gun, that this is more complicated than the plug and play. And I'll stop from there in terms of ideas about the glossary, but I wanted to put that out there if the goal here is to discuss what would be the most bang for the buck from your efforts in the here and now in the short term to produce to the group. I'm just thinking that the glossary solves a lot of those problems. It gets us all talking about the same thing, and it also gets us focused on concepts that are pervasive but not necessarily uniform.
You know, I like the idea of a glossary. We have a problem though with making that our kind of first deliverable, if it's going to be our only deliverable by the end of December, because it doesn't answer the mail. We've been told that we need to do these templates, and I don't think we can. We have a lot of leeway here, but I don't think we have enough leeway to redefine the word template to being glossary. But I like your idea, yeah. And perhaps we'll do it in a different context.
Yeah, just to kind of follow, I actually agree with John 100% in this, pretty much.
Is that unusual?
So far. But, you know, when you're looking, you have your bread and butter, as you said, and you have your cream, your tolled, and your availability payments. I mean, why limit the cream? Why not give a sample transaction with shadow tolls or something where you combine availability and toll just to give somebody, and I mean, Columbia did a transaction where they combine availability and toll. We have some others where they have variable terms, concessions. There's a lot of things going out there in countries that are not as developed as the U.S., and I think that it's good for us to see this menu of options. I would hate it for, you know, my own country to be a bit behind the rest of the world that we're donating money to and teaching. So I think that maybe some sample transactions with using different types would be good.
Ah, so this is the first time I think we've heard the idea of sample transactions.
There you go.
And maybe applied to some sort of template, and that even provides some opportunity for variation. Any ideas, any thoughts about us producing sample transactions? How does that sit with people?
Well,
I think everybody's getting tired.
Well, I was just going to, you know, take that a step further. I mean, in the context of a P3 transaction, what would a sample transaction look like? Any thoughts on how that could be formulated? I mean, you brought up the notion. Did you want to expand on that? Give it some more thought. Can you give him the mic?
I guess since we're being a little bit open here, do we use at the World Bank? We use Ruta del Sol in Colombia, which is a P3 transaction that basically you had a problem. The problem was you had difficult tunneling through mountainous sections in Colombia, and they wanted to connect from basically the mountainous areas in Bogota all the way to the sea. And they solved it by breaking the concession into three different sections, and it happened that they achieved bankability in a situation that wasn't in the applied to the different sections, something that's more of a design build for certain sections, something that's more of a toll, and something that's more of a toll plus availability. So, you know, sort of looking at the objective of having this whole thing be sort of under private sector provision, and then thinking about the challenges and thinking about how you solved it using different mechanisms, and then eventually achieve success, then you have sort of a print. But, you know, it's just one sort of sample that the advisory services has done, and there's a guy named Richard Cabello who's sort of the expert on this over there. That sort of came to mind when I was thinking of it, but I'm not prescribing anything. I was thinking more broadly, and in terms of what that would look like, I think it would take a bit more thinking. So I'm just telling you what was on the top of my head.
Okay,
thank
fair
you.
Enough, and that's what
thank
we're
you.
Doing here. That's good.
Thank you. Steve?
My personal view is that going the sample route is probably not a good use of limited resources, at least out of the box, and that the focus should be more for this, at least this initial effort, along the lines of what we discussed earlier around sort of the traditional regular way design, build, finance, operate, maintain, tolling sort of project concept, and developing the commentary around the common provisions for that base case concession agreement, which we all know and know well. And maybe some sample provisions or examples of how these provisions have actually appeared in certain contracts, and leave it at that. I think that'll be a huge accomplishment to pull that off by the end of the year.
Let me ask you a question along those lines. You mentioned that, you know, we know that model of design, build, finance, operate, maintain, toll, concession pretty well. Do you think that maybe, since there are some existing examples of that model out there, that maybe that's a resource that would serve a lot of new states fairly well, and perhaps value might be added by trying to focus on another type where there might not be so many existing examples? I'm just throwing that out there for thought.
I don't think so. I mean, my view is that there's still a lot of states that have a lot to learn about that basic model.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there's so many stakeholders at the state level and local level around these projects that still need to be educated.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be a huge accomplishment just to get the a broader information base around the base model, mm-hmm. and then evolve it maybe to availability and take it from there.
Okay, great.
Yeah, because in response to Steve's point, I think, and it stands to reason in some respects, but the private sector does understand the basic standard, you know, plain vanilla type P3 contract and what it looks like, whether it's availability or toll revenue type deal. But the government sector doesn't, actually. And even within the states that have done a lot of P3, there is, in my experience, an issue with know-how retention, right? A number of states face the issue where once they've done two or three projects, they lose the people with the know-how to the private sector. We all know that, right? And the people that are then left to do the follow-on deals, mm-hmm. they don't have this database that they can go to. I mean, I think it's really important for you guys here that are tasked with taking this forward to not underestimate the benefit of an educational tool. Just because all of these deals have happened doesn't mean to say that there is a repository and every contract is publicly available. But everyone in this room that's advising public authorities will tell you that we don't spend a lot of time talking about what the words of the provisions should say. What we actually spend a lot of time talking about is the underlying principles and getting agreement on the principles. And that's why I think, you know, the commentary idea is key, because it's, you know, you can at one level provide a template contract, right, which has got every provision in, which I think we're all agreed is probably not ideal. But it's more about, you know, every single P3 deal has to include provisions that deal with the same issues. It's about having something somewhere that you can go to, a manual that outlines what those issues are that you're going to have to face. And there are tons of P3 toolkits, right? But every single one of our government clients says, you know what's really unfortunate about most of those toolkits? They only get you up until the point where you've decided that you want to do a P3,
mm-hmm.
right? They don't take you beyond that. And this document, even though it might not be an all-singing, all-dancing contract, it is going to be invaluable if it's just an educational tool. And I think the moment you go away from the basic idea, Mike's comment, which I wholly endorse, you will start to spiral out of control in the context of your timetable. You know, that every project has common has issues that are dealt with on every project. Some of those have got twists and turns, whether it's a demand risk or an availability deal. And then every project has project-specific issues. The moment you start going down example projects and stuff, you're getting into the project specifics, really, examples of project studies. Once you've got this exercise out of the way, you can do as many case studies as you want on individual transactions. But I think keeping it simple is not going to result in producing something that is beneficial and arguably, you know, the government sector is crying out for.
Great, thank you. More to say?
Just an experience that I went through within the last year. When we talk about projects, specific provisions in a project, and we talk about this sample, you know, contract, sample projects, it's very important to understand that, as Andy said, each project has certain characteristics, and at a certain point of time, based on certain information that was available, the team who was working on the project made certain decisions. And when now we go and look at those provisions, it's very important. I mean, if you want to go to the detail of exploring how the contract is designed for this specific project, we need to explain all the underlying assumptions and information that was available to that team at that particular point of time. I get this question a lot, that you use this provision in Project X. Why didn't you use it in Project B? Why did you change it? If it was good and it was protecting public interest in one project, why in the second project you didn't use it? And people make all these comparisons. the important thing that sometimes is lost is that each project is unique, the situation is unique, the risk profile of each project is different, and also the decisions that are made are based on different level of information that is available. So it's very important to understand that, even for example, for as simple as a compensation event, as simple as when you're going through this procurement, what is the level of accuracy of different studies that do you have? Because based on a lot of different factors, you may make different decisions and different provisions would be added or deleted from the contract, which is very different from one project to the other project. If your survey, aerial survey level of accuracy is this much, your decision might be different than if the survey is different. If you have investment grade traffic and revenue study already done, it might be different than if you have level one or level two. So my point is that it's very important to understand, if you're focusing on one project, you need to just explain all the details of why that decision was made, so it's more educational rather than prescribing a provision.
I think you are talking about case study there as opposed to a sample that we would apply a template to. Very good comments across the board. Lots of food for thought.
DJ has a comment.
You have something else to say?
Yes.
Okay.
Put the BlackBerry down. Paying attention.
Yeah, I would have a slightly dissenting. I think Jen needs a challenge. And I think it'd be good for her to do an availability payment type deal. Because if you look at the projects that are coming up, more and more availability payment. And there's a significant gap there, even in states that have done P3s before, about some of the issues that swirl away. So if your delivery timetable is December, I think that would be more, I agree with all the keep it simple, but I think that would be a more valuable deliverable than one that talks just about solely user fee with no state contribution. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Jim, what do you have to say?
I very much appreciate DJ's faith in me. I'd like a lifeline. And I'd like to follow up on the gentleman. I don't know if that was Mr. Fraser that spoke next to you at your table.
Right?
You were saying that all the toolkits get you to the point where you're ready to consider a P3 and they don't really get you to that extra point. Is there a toolkit that you've used overseas or in the U.S. that has been a useful educational tool that we could adapt some of our material from? Is there, what has been useful to you? And I don't want to, I know there's many, many resources out there, but if anybody has anything that they can tell us about after this that has worked, it'd be helpful, because we want not to start from scratch if possible.
Okay. Lots of good conversation. Let me throw out something right now. We're at about the 3:00 mark, and maybe we have exhausted this overall subject. I don't know, but I'm going to take a sheet from my husband's playbook. His favorite question is, what should we have asked that we haven't asked? And so I throw that out there. You see the questions, the topical areas that we came up with, the questions under each one, what should have been up there on the screen that you didn't see, that you'd like to talk about in particular? Yes, Jake. Yeah.
I think one of the questions is, and if we're talking about best practices or at least issues to spot, one of the issues to spot is, to me, what could DOT do on its end in terms of how it administers funding to enhance P3.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that one.
What could DOT do?
You mean USDOT?
USDOT do in terms of when it comes to TIFIA funding and other reviews and approvals to enhance the process? I mean, a number of gentlemen raised the issue of 11th hour requirements being implement that are not required by statute or regulation, having an adverse effect not just on those individual projects, but that kind of uncertainty, mm-hmm. I think ultimately has a depressive effect on the P3 market, if you will.
Right. That's a good point. I think some of those items can be addressed in P3 model contracts, and some of them probably should be addressed in a different context. Jake, did we miss anything that you can think about?
Maybe one more way to frame the question is, certainly we want this to be a useful exercise and to produce something that will be useful for folks. If there's anything else that any other ways to think about these contracts or frame them that would make them more usable, that's something we definitely I'd be interested in as well.
And I think Jake makes a really good point. We genuinely want to develop something that is useful, and at the same time, we don't want to develop anything that inadvertently dampens the market. So that'll be a line that we're walking. Building on what Jake said, any thoughts about what could make the ultimate deliverable particularly useful, Jake?
Matt Gill, Transurban. Has USDOT had any conversations with your counterparts in Canada?
Not really. Jake has underway a project whereby we're going out and looking at what other countries have done in this area, and so we're just kind of starting on that, and we're going to build on that effort. Can you recommend something in terms of Canada?
Well, I attended their national conference in November, and it's a world of difference from where we're at here, and they're clearly way ahead of us in the contractual issues, mm-hmm. the public acceptance, the transparency, the standardization standardization to the extent it can be, which sounds like Congress's mandate here. And I just think that I know they were very open, both all the provinces, Ontario, BC, Alberta, as well Quebec, as well as the federal office, was very open to accepting international visitors and visitors from the states to share their kind of lessons learned and best practices. And I think it would be worth, someone from USDOT throughout this process, contacting.
I think you're probably
some of those
right. And Deborah has done some work in reaching out to Australia and getting some input from them as well. And
yeah, I think some of the jurisdictions that we've identified in our process here of sort of due diligence include Canada, the UK, Australia, and I guess one question to throw out along the lines of what Jen asked earlier is, which resources do the people in this room think would be most useful, most relevant, and not just which ones have developed standard contracts, but also what are the differences between those jurisdictions and the United States that limit the value of some of the exercises they've done. These are issues we're looking into, and we definitely would appreciate feedback or ideas on that front.
Steve.
Yes, Steve.
At the risk of boring people with my personal experience from 30 years ago, one of the things that the US EPA did in its technical assistance program after it developed this package of information similar to what you're doing is they conducted a traveling roadshow that was sponsored by the government, by the US EPA in that case. In this case, it would be DOT, that went around the country and offered a day or day and a half seminar to state and local officials at a very low cost. I don't remember what it was. Not that you would want to compete with the private conference sponsors. That what really was wouldn't be the intent. But this would be more of a nuts and bolts type workshop to take what you've pulled together through this process and present it in a very basic, understandable way to state and local government officials.
I'm glad you brought that up. And, today we've been concentrating on what should this template look like, or the series of templates. But the second piece of what Congress told us to do is go out and promote it. So that's a good idea, and I never get tired of hearing what you've done in the past, if it worked. Mark, any comments, observations, things that we should have asked that we didn't ask?
I'm still wondering why the Seahawks didn't kick a field goal in the second quarter. So I'm good. Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. We have a comment over here.
Okay. Yes.
Sorry, Regina. I'm just focusing on what you had said your husband had recommended. What is it that you should have asked us to do? I recognize, I'm again, reflecting on what we've talked about today, and I think from a very high level, a lot of what we have been doing is recommending what it is that the thing that Congress said you're supposed to do should look like. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if, in your view, that can be informed by an arrow sort of pointing the other way that says, what are the people out here who are going to be the recipients of these things? What would they want? Not how should the thing that you give us, you know, how can we make the thing that you've mandated us to give you look more like, what do you guys want? And I put that out in part as to assume a little bit of your role as a corollary to your more general question. I have nothing personal to offer to answer that question, but I'm wondering if that would be a useful question.
No, I think that's a good point, and it struck me, and I mentioned to Deborah that when we get a little further down the road and we kind of have a game plan, we need to go brief the folks in Congress that came up with this idea and say, okay, this is what we're planning to do, and maybe even give some of the flavor of, you know, folks were kind of scratching their heads as to what you asked for and thought maybe the question should be a little, or the request should be a little different. What do you think of that? And have that communication with them, because, you know, there was so little in the way of detail on this. I'm happy that they asked for it, to be honest with you. I think that it really gave us a license to provide some useful information to the community that kind of didn't have before. And so this has been a huge positive. But now the challenge is figuring out how to deliver and what really is useful. So, yeah, I think we'll probably do that. Any other questions, comments, anything? I think this has been just a great session. I know that I've gotten a lot out of it, learned a lot. It's not 4 o'clock yet. There's no rule that we have to go till 4, but we don't want to close before we make sure that we've heard from everyone that has something to say. That, yes.
I'd be interested to hear experience of other folk in the room, but and I don't know to what extent you'd have the ability to do this, but you know, we've talked a lot about and DJ made comments around the benefits of addressing issues around the availability payment model. Up and down the country, more and more we speak to different DOTs that are all expressing the same concern about availability payment models, which is there's no real guidance from GASB on how to account for those types of projects, whereas there is good guidance. There's guidance that actually, you know, does attempt to give indications of how to deal with that. It's relevant because the rules around how to account for availability deals may well influence how the terms of those contracts should actually look. I mean, we've certainly had conversations with GASB, and they have views, but, you know, the sooner they can come up with guidance around that issue, I think the better, because it is definitely it's a point that, because of that point, until it's unlocked, that there will always be a bottleneck, I think, in the use of that model of contracting. So, I mean, I would encourage you to the extent it's with your remit and you can, to consult with GASB and try to get a sense of how long it might be. They are aware, they very explicitly excluded treatment of availability payment deals from their guidance that they published last year or the end of 2011, I can't remember when it was. And they do definitely have something in the pipeline, I believe. The sooner that can come out, though, the better, I think.
Well, that's great. I'm encouraged to hear that GASB is finally paying some concerted attention to this, because I know it's an issue that's been kicked around for a number of years, where states were concerned about whether or not availability payments would be considered as debt, and how to factor that into their planning. So I don't.
We can look into that. I actually have had some experience working with GASB in a past life. And we can see what we can do to facilitate that conversation. And we give a lot of webinars. Maybe that would be, once we have a better idea of where they're at, maybe that would be an idea for us to do some education on. And that might spur their activities, too. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Anything else? Prabhat, anything that you'd like to offer?
And learning. It's I'm a finance guy learning contracting, so this has been very educational.
Okay, thank
I'll keep
you.
My thoughts to myself for a while.
That's
until
okay.
I learn more.
That's okay. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Hank has something.
Just on the very specific issue of looking to what other countries have done to lighten Jake's load a little bit, there was a scan 5 or 6 years ago in an expert task group and all that, so it might be helpful to, you know, farm out some of the work if, you know, FHWA wants to reconvene that expert task group. I'm sure, I think a lot of the folks are still around in the industry, so I was not on it. I came in after it was done. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go anywhere, but, you know, the expertise is still there. The people who have done work in multiple countries and can quickly sort of find the right resources to look at everything that's been done overseas might be helpful.
I'm looking here. Jose Manuel was here from Spain, and it looks like he has gone. But he was part of that scan trip that you were talking about, and we're definitely tap into him. Patrick, anything that you'd like to offer?
Not really. I think this has been great. I learned a lot, and as Regina was saying, we have developed a tool for value for money analysis called P3 Value. And if anyone is interested, give me your card and we'll send you information. Thank you.
And let me also mention that Jen Mayer, who has spoken up a few times, also works in the area of P3s in our office. She just completed, 6 months ago, a P3 primer that is on our website that I think personally does a very, very good job of kind of laying out the basics of P3s. And she was also instrumental in putting together our P3 program plan, which she kind of gave over the fence to Patrick to implement. But anything that you'd like to add or question, Jen?
I'd just like to thank everybody for coming and continuing to participate. This is part of our P3 program is gaining the expertise of everybody. So this has been a very valuable forum.
Okay. Deborah, anything else?
No comments. Again, I echo my colleague's statements in that this has been very beneficial, very educational.
Oh, we've got one comment over here.
Oh.
A question? Questions are good. Okay. Thank you.
Hi. Sorry if this is inappropriate to ask, but I was just wondering, what are the next steps for your team in developing the actual model contract? And while I very much appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I've been, you know, educated by a lot of this feedback, I'm wondering if we'll be getting a chance to provide further feedback to you on an actual draft.
Yeah. That's a great question. The next step is for us to work on defining what it is we're going after. And this was very, very helpful to get us to that point. And then Prabhat is going to actually work with a number of folks to put together a statement of work. We will go out and get a contractor to help us do whatever it is that we decide that we're going to work on. We will keep the docket open, so that's a continuous opportunity to provide comments. We have not decided yet, but we might very well put out a draft and then solicit comments again through a listening session. We kind of haven't figured that out at this point. But what we do want to do, we got to get our job done. We've got to get to December and have a deliverable. But having said that, we want to make sure that we hear from everybody and that has something to say. And we recognize this is a really big thing that we're doing, and it could have some significant implications on the model in this country for implementing P3s. And so we want to make sure that we do it right and that it is useful. Jake, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I think you covered it well in terms of what the next steps are. And just to reiterate, as we go through that process, we are going to be looking to keep everyone engaged and to make sure that all of the different stakeholders have the opportunity to provide input throughout the process.
Thank you. Deborah?
The Federal Register docket number is posted on the web, on the screen here, along with the link for where you can electronically submit comments. That docket will remain open until May 31st of this year. There's also copies of the Federal Register notice, if you haven't already seen it, and that has the docket number and the link included for your reference. So we're happy to receive your input today. We're very, very pleased and very grateful for everything you've contributed thus far, but this is not, of course, your last opportunity to let us know what you're thinking. So please, we encourage you. We've done our best to try to record the information that you've shared with us today. But again, I mean, you heard the acoustics in this room, so I'm not sure how well we were able to capture it. And I would encourage you to record your comments and your thoughts, even though you've shared them with us today, to please also submit them via the Federal Register docket or send us an email or what have you, so that we do capture your thoughts correctly. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank Deborah. She has done a great job. Facilitating this conversation, and Prabhat did a great job setting things up. And most of all, thank you for all your comments and participation. It's just been great. Thank you. And be safe going home.